Welcome to Fast Forward, a series of conversations featuring big thinkers in philanthropy. This series is produced by the Minnesota Council on Foundations. For more information, visit us at mcf.org. I'm Levi Weinhagen, Communications and Media Specialist at MCF, and this is my interview with Native Americans in Philanthropy CEO, Sarah Eaglehart. I'm Levi Weinhagen with MCF, and today I'm talking to Sarah Eaglehart. Eaglehart holds a Master's in Business Administration, a Bachelor of Arts in Mass Communication, and a Bachelor of Arts in American Indian Studies. And Sarah, in 2014, was a recipient of the National Center for American Indians Enterprise Development's 40 Under 40 Award, which recognizes emerging Native American leaders who have demonstrated leadership, initiative, and dedication and made significant contributions in business and or their community. Sarah is an enrolled member of the Oglala Lakota Nation of Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Thank you for talking to me today, Sarah.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Which of those words did I pronounce wrong?
got them pretty close.
Is it Oglala?
Oglala Lakota.
Oglala Lakota. Great. Mm-hmm. That was the one I was most nervous about. The rest of them I knew pretty well. So you, just this past September, became the CEO of Native Americans in Philanthropy.
Yes, I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's very exciting.
It has been very exciting. It's been sort of a whirlwind of different places and times and spaces, but I've really enjoyed getting to know the family of philanthropy, the Native American sector and foundation sector. It's been really, really great.
So I know you've done a lot of work in communications, and you've done a lot of work with nonprofits. You worked for the Episcopal Church mm-hmm. for quite a while, mm-hmm. and now those are related. I mean, that work is related to the philanthropic work that Native Americans in Philanthropy is doing, but that is seems like a sort of a switch or a transition. So I'm curious if you were looking to do the work you were doing in a different way, or if this was an opportunity that came up.
It was definitely an opportunity that I think somehow fell in my lap, and I had some really great friends that I had made in my work at the Episcopal Church that were doing sort of national tribal work and philanthropy and grant making. And so when the CEO position came open, I had quite a few of them sort of whispering in my ear, hey, that job's open. But at the time, I was just really involved with my work, and we were in the midst of a lot of structure and policy making and budgeting and things, so I really wasn't paying attention. And so when the opportunity came and this person was like, hey, I want to nominate you for this job, I was like, oh, maybe I need to pay attention here. And so that's why I say it kind of fell in my lap, because I had heard about it, but when somebody comes along that's really well respected in the Native community and says, I think you're right for this job, and you tend to take it seriously. So it happened pretty quickly, and it was, I loved my colleagues at the Episcopal Church that I worked with on the denominational staff, and working for the first female presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church was amazing, and being the team leader of diversity and ethnic ministries and doing social justice work was just really amazing. And I couldn't have asked for a better work environment, but it was also something where it was a crash course in every possible issue that you can imagine, and a lot of bridge building work. And so I'm, I guess, pleasantly surprised to find that my job at Native Americans in Philanthropy is much the same work that I was doing at the Episcopal Church, and still being that educator and the bridge builder and sort of a weaver in a lot of ways to both the foundation world and the Native American communities as well. So I feel like it's a really great fit for where I was at and where I'm at right now, and very exciting because Native Americans in Philanthropy just celebrated their 25th anniversary. And so they're at a very interesting place where they're all about going to the next level and being innovative and creative and trying to find the best ways to be impactful in our communities. And so for me, coming from a very a perspective of the church of being international and serving international indigenous communities and then doing cross-sectional work amongst different ethnic groups, it feels like a really great fit where I've already been thinking about asset mapping and I've already been thinking about technology and how to serve different communities. And so for me, it's a very fulfilling place to be in this moment in time because I also get to connect all those grassroots communities doing this really, really hard work in Native communities. And I have a really deep understanding of what that means to the community. And so it's very, very humbling. And I mean that in a very deep and profound way, that it is really humbling to be in this place and time, because I really do think that we can be a change agent in the midst of all of this work that's happening out there.
One of that's really compelling. One of the sort of through lines I noticed, it seems like the work you were doing as a team leader for diversity and ethnic ministries and a program officer at the Episcopal Church.
Right.
And then now with Native Americans in Philanthropy, which it's, I think a part of the mission there is you guys are sort of engaging and advocating for Native voices and Native practices,
right,
but trying to remain open to non-Natives as well.
Yes.
Which I think is also, it seems like something that was present with your work at the church.
Right.
This focusing on your core community while staying open to any and all people who want to be a part of or be supporting or be involved in some way.
Definitely.
So I'm curious if there's something you find particularly energizing or exciting about trying to speak with and for a community, your community, while being inclusive and open to others. That's an elevated challenge from just representing your community. So I wonder if there's something about that that just engages you in a certain way.
I definitely so. Part of the work in both places and both jobs was translating, and translating in a variety of ways of not only just traditional practices of work and traditional practices of our culture, but also just sharing, you know, why it was important and looking back at our history. One of the great things that I was really proud to be a part of was repudiating the doctrine of discovery, which basically meant the Episcopal Church really acknowledged its role in manifest destiny and saying that we were wrong. And so in 2009, when this happened, it was pretty revolutionary, I think, within the Native American sector of people were saying, wow. And then all of a sudden, you know, for me being a program officer, I felt like when we pass something, we really need to have an action that follows up. And for me, that action was to be able to educate both the Native community and the non-Native community about this history that is still impacting our communities today and sort of the systemic struggles that we face. And also looking at that thread of our shared history with African Americans and slavery that also came from the doctrine of discovery. So for me, looking at the Native American context and educating about your history, it takes you to the Indian boarding school era and how, you know, we had over 500 boarding schools in the United States and different denominations were in charge of these government-funded schools that were there to, quote, kill the Indian and save the man. And the whole idea was to assimilate Native Americans so that they would lose their culture and their language and their identity. So when you're looking at healing in our traditional communities now, you also have to realize that many of our communities, while we have some of the fortunate ones still have our languages and our cultures intact, there are other ones that are still struggling with trying to find their identity and culture and language. And so when we're given this idea from mainstream society that we need to adapt to fit sort of a Western thought mindset, we're having to not only educate our Native communities about well, this is what it means, and this is where there's some of those expectations that, you know, they want or need for grant making or resource development, but then also explaining to the non-Native community and foundation world about how we communicate differently. We're very visual individuals, and our evaluation systems are much different, and we work in very different ways and can be innovative and creative, but also that sometimes the practices that are given to us from foundations or boxes that we have to fit into don't help us do that work that we need to do in our own communities, or kind of prohibit that creativity or that innovation. So part of it is also trying to shift that perception of understanding that that the work we do is very, very necessary in our Native communities, and the nonprofits that are there doing this hard, difficult work, whether it's healing or advocacy or youth engagement or arts, that all of that work is also somewhat related to one another, and they're all very, very important. And it may look differently than what you think it looks like. And so part of our role is to also advocate on behalf of that really, really important work that is facing and doing great things in Indian Country, and sharing it broadly as well to say, this is why it's important. And our history is all intertwined with that. And the systems that we're sitting in today, whether it's a reservation system or urban Indians, and dealing with even our healthcare, our educational systems, or even our justice systems are very, we're still trying to find, I guess, the best balance, and having to educate, you know, people about the strengths and the difficulties is really important too. And that's where Native Americans and philanthropy comes in.
On the area of equality, I think you articulated a bit that there's a lot of potential responses or what people see as answers to any number of problems in the area of equality, which often can mean somebody tries to create a solution with this thing when really some other thing may be viewed as more effective or more impactful. So I'm curious about, for you personally, and as you view the work of Native Americans in philanthropy, if you have tools or ways of articulating to somebody that you're not rejecting their support, but trying to nuance how they support and how they could support in a way that is more helpful for the community that they're trying to serve.
Right. Well, and I think you said the key word, which is community. And for us, all the solutions are really going to come from the community, and being able to work with the community in depth to understand the issues that they're facing. I know that there have been some great folks that have gone on to different funding tours and also spend time in the community and get a glimpse, and that's definitely a best practice of what needs to happen in order to know the community that you're serving. And I think part of what Native Americans in philanthropy has been a big part of over the last 25 years is being that convener amongst the different groups and being the educator amongst those groups, and being able to really provide the safe space for those different organizations to spend time with each other and learn from one another and share information. And so that's a space that we've held. Moving forward, we're working on different ways to engage these different groups through technology and really building an app and getting an app in place that's very informational. But we're also working on our website to have, we're calling it the Engage Map, but it's mainly an asset mapping. And so being able to map the assets of the Native nonprofits that we're serving, and also the foundations that we're serving, and also the tribes, because their tribes also have their own organizations that are doing this type of work, for them to be able to find each other based on a topic, and whether it's youth or women or art or advocacy for those groups to be able to find each other. And so technology is another way that we're trying to bridge that gap as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Is that viewed as lower barriers by creating technology, more people can access technology?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I think one of the really interesting pieces of information that I found out over the years and through technology is understanding that, you know, a lot of communities that may be poverty stricken may not have access to Wi-Fi every day or even access to a computer every day, but most often they will have their phone. And so their phone is a really great way to engage people and share information. And that's definitely what I want to bring into the next 25 years of Native Americans and philanthropy, to help innovate and get us to the next level of work and engagement.
That seems like a go to where the people are idea, as opposed to trying to get them to come to where you are.
Yes, definitely.
One of the things I noticed, I was in reading up on you, is it looks like you've been involved in activism and sort of issues of justice since at least you were a teen, that little factoid that I noticed. And so I'm curious, since the work that you do is really deeply personally connected to you, how aware you are at trying to decide when you should keep some sort of distance in any work that you're doing, or when you should just be fully open about how important and how much it means to you. I wonder how many times leaders in philanthropic organizations have to decide whether they speak to this affects me personally, or tries to speak to this is just an issue that matters to my organization.
To be honest, I have found over the years that I never used to talk about the stories of how I grew up or what happened to me growing up in on the reservation, you know, near a farming town, or having a mother that had a car accident that left her with a traumatic brain injury that then led her to alcoholism, and, you know, growing up with my aunties and, you know, my grandma. I never used to talk about that until I started working really professionally at the Episcopal Church. And something that I learned in traveling to all of the different Native communities, I learned that in my story, people could find themselves in that story and could relate to it. And I found that by sharing that information with them was not only a way to heal myself, but it was a way of helping to heal the community, and that we do have a common story and a common thread. And so for me, the work is very personal, but I also feel like my story of having to deal with these issues of, you know, mental health with my mother, and because then she fell into addictions and substance abuse, and then dealing with, you know, my own high school and the story of you know, protesting a high school mascot that, what it, I mean, it can, and this was 1994, so I'm dating myself, but but, you know, it was really on the front end of all the mascot issues of, you know, I have a twin sister. We were these two twins who said, we were just sitting there saying, this is so wrong. This, you know, they had high school kids that were mostly non-Native that were dressing up to pretend to be Native and enact a ceremony that did not exist, that within our cultures, where you had five warrior princesses who sat around a circle singing Indian love song and having a medicine man judge them based upon their weight and their earrings and their hair, on whether or not they should be a gift to the big chief, was wrong on so many levels. You know, racism, sexism, spiritual degradation. All of these stories that really began my time with activism and advocacy and understanding racial equity and Also being able to share this information out to the community. These are all stories that have really grounded me. And I have found that so many other Native people have had really similar issues. So for me, that's a story that connects us, but also allows, by sharing our story and sharing the truth of it, I think that's something that the broader community needs to hear, because they don't often hear about these stories or how they're still impacting us today when you look at the Redskins issue, the R word. And when you're in different places where I was recently at a meeting with a very well-known corporation, and they were sharing a story about how this corporation still sells R-word material in their store. And so different people spoke up, and this group of Native leaders spoke up about, well, maybe you shouldn't be selling this material in your store. And then, so the story, we weren't really heard at that time, but then in sharing the work, one of the CEOs had talked about how he had pulled off the shelves, a doll that this doll had, it was two dolls. It was a male doll and a female doll, and the male doll was pulling off the female doll's head. And so when they saw this doll in these stores, they didn't know how it got there, but they were really wanted to make sure that it didn't, that they pulled that out of the stores immediately. And so I started sharing the story of, hey, we know we're talking about, you pulled that off the shelves immediately, but when we're talking about Native American scalps, somehow it's still okay. And when, if we were talking about blackface, people would be so mad. But if we're talking about redface, somehow it's still okay. And so trying to really educate different groups about how these images, these very stereotypical images, are still affecting our people and our youth and affecting our healing systems, really. Because if you're viewed as not being a person and not being important enough for us to have, the same rights as everybody else, then that sets up a double standard. And so the sharing these stories and this, the storytelling aspect is really important in the Native community. And I feel like me being able to share those stories is also educating in a way that I'm hoping is transformative and profound.
Is there something also to you being in a position of leadership and also remaining vulnerable that helps demonstrate you can go through these experiences and still get to a place where you can lead others and help others? Do you feel like there's a level of sort of broad mentorship that you're doing as well?
I haven't thought about it that way before, but I will say that I really definitely think that I love mentoring. I spend a lot of time talking to young adults and young people out of college, and what I loved about that work was that I felt like, I'm going to tell you all this stuff no one told me. And I'm going to help you get further, I hope. And that you might be able to find yourself and find a way of healing and find your life's goals and your life's work quicker than hopefully than I did. And so for me, part of that is, I think, mentoring and also being courageous enough to share that story that is, a lot of it is vulnerable. And I think that the more that we learn how to be vulnerable and courageous in telling our story, I think the more that we're going to be able to heal and get to a place of understanding and reconciliation. And at the end of the day, for any of us to do our work, whether, with the foundation world or serving the nonprofits, you have to get to that place of reconciliation. And that's going to take some truth telling and some storytelling and a lot of laughter and a lot of fun and a community building, and you have to find that time to spend together in order to make that difference.
So, last question, somewhat arbitrary, but 5 years from now, do you have a vision or an idea of how you'd like to see Native Americans in philanthropy, like where the work will be at or how it'll be viewed by the community it's connected with?
I'm really hoping that Native Americans in philanthropy will have so many different partnerships with so many different organizations that we'll all really be leveraging our resources around common goals and common initiatives and common issues. That's where I think that we can be more effective in our communities nationally and down to the grassroots level. I think being able to collaborate and make a meaningful change will require doing the hard work of working together, I think. And so I'm definitely up for that challenge, and I think that through technology we can make it happen faster. And not that it won't be still work. There'll be a lot of different people, but at least knowing where those assets are and being able to bring them together in different spaces to work on those issues, I really believe that that's where the work of NAP is. And so I'm definitely excited about that.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for your time today, Sarah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this Fast Forward podcast, share it with your colleagues and visit us at mcf.org for resources on grant making and individual giving.